Joined now on the air by Carrboro Mayor Lydia Lavelle for the first time in a couple of weeks. Good to have you back on the air with us.
Yeah, it's great to be back.
And a lot going on in Carrboro. We've got a public hearing coming up next Tuesday on the IFC Food First. We'll talk about that in just a little while. But first, I haven't had a chance to talk about this yet. The town of Carrboro has, along with 117 other cities and counties, filed an amicus brief, a friend of the court brief with the U.S. Supreme Court, on the immigration case that they're hearing right now, which is the United States versus Texas. This is considering President Obama's executive action on immigration, whether it's an overreach of executive power. Carrboro signing on to an amicus brief urging the Supreme Court to let the executive action stand. Why did the town do that?
Yeah, well, it first of all, we were sought after as a municipality to sign on. I think the folks who orchestrated the writing of the brief out of the New York, the office of the attorney of New York City, looked to communities like Carrboro, counties and communities, cities like Carrboro, to be logical type signees because of our, you know, policies on welcoming our immigrant community and doing what we can to support them and support them in their livelihood and help them continue to be good members of our community as they are. And this, of course, as you said, it's around the plan that President Obama announced. Gosh, it was in November 2014 was when he first announced this plan to expand eligibility for quasi-legal status and work permits to immigrants who perhaps entered the country illegally as children or ones that were here illegally in other means. But in any event, some of the programs that Obama had set up, I think, or that are set up or affect the larger cities more than Carrboro. And so they took the lead. And as I perused the amicus brief, you know, some of the programs they reference aren't as relevant in Carrboro, but the overall underlying tenor of the brief, which is basically that local government is the community that really is on the ground with these members of the community that we want to figure out a way to protect and help these folks continue to work in our communities and stay in our communities. So the brief is a little bit, you'd probably enjoy reading it, Aaron.
I probably would, yeah.
The brief is a little bit, it's, you know, it's an amicus curiae brief. So right. It's mostly attorneys, you know, it's attorneys of these communities around the United States.
So this is a brief that's submitted by a party that isn't directly at stake. They're not a petitioner or respondent in the Supreme Court, but they have an interest or a stake in the larger issue.
Exactly. Right? And it's really interesting. You go to the Supreme Court website and you see the briefs, of course, by the parties, but you see all these extra briefs by different groups or entities that could be affected by the decision that's rendered. And I was looking over that, which was also interesting. But this particular brief, which we were part of the filing, it was filed March 7th. It says brief for amicus curiae, the mayors of New York, Los Angeles, Atlanta, Austin, Birmingham, and 113 additional mayors. So okay. One of whom is me. County executives and localities, and of course the United States Conference of Mayors and the National League of Cities. So, the brief really revolves around the matter of standing, whether the state of Texas actually had the standing to seek this nationwide injunction against the president's executive order where he was giving guidance on immigration. So that's kind of the technical nature of it.
But why wouldn't the state have standing?
Well, it's interesting. It kind of goes into this notion that one state, for example, can't speak for all of the cities or all of the states.
Okay.
It goes a little bit into, they talk about the financial hardship to Texas to implement it, and New York talks about the financial hardship to New York to not implement it. You know, it's kind of a tit for tat.
Okay.
In essence, a single plaintiff's claim of future administrative costs does not support standing for a nationwide injunction that inflicts widespread local harms. That's okay. Kind of one of the arguments. But the other thing I thought was interesting was, just looking at the questions presented, one is the very technical question. But then it says, in addition to the questions presented by the petition, the parties are directed to brief and argue the following question, whether the guidance, i.e. Obama's guidance, violates the Take Care Clause of the Constitution, Article 3, or Article 2, Section 3. Mm. And that's not a part of the Constitution I'd always study that much.
Right.
So I looked at it, Article 2, Section 3, and that's exactly what it says, the take care clause.
Usually you get a sense of what the clause actually refers to with the name of it, but take care is something else entirely.
Right. And so it's Section 3 is under the article that talks about the president's duties. You know, and this is where it says he shall from time to time give to the Congress information of the State of the Union. He may on extraordinary occasions convene them, you know, yada, yada. But then it says he shall take care that the laws be faithfully executed. Okay. So this is really what the essence of it is. Can this executive order actually stand constitutionally?
Right.
I also noted that it's being argued on April 18th, 2016. So some had wondered, you know, years ago or not years ago, maybe months ago, whether this would actually get heard and or decided before Obama left office. But clearly it will be. So it's going to be a really important decision.
So what is actually at stake for the town of Carrboro? You mentioned the larger cities in the states have more at stake in terms of sort of the actual implementation or non-implementation of this. Is it more of a just sort of promoting the values behind it thing for Carrboro?
Definitely promoting the values. Digging down into it, I know it is supposed to expand eligibility for quasi-legal status and work permits to lots more immigrants who entered or stayed in the country or immigrants that are here who are the parents maybe of U.S. citizens or green card holders. So I think in some way it would definitely affect some of our citizens. But in any event, it's one that we certainly support for our larger cities as well.
All right. Speaking with Carrboro Mayor Lydia Lavelle, who's also a legal professor at NC Central. So we're getting deep into the law, as we're occasionally want to do, because I think both of us have taught con law before.
You challenge me, Aaron. Let's put it that way.
Okay, all right. I like doing that. I like getting nerdy about constitutional law because there's not that many people in the world you can do that with. There's eight justices now on the Supreme Court with the vacancy, which I also want to talk about. But with the absence of Justice Scalia, what is there any way to expect an outcome here?
I think so. I mean, I still do. Yeah, mm-hmm. I do. I think so. I mean, the court.
Or which outcome do you expect?
Well, contrary to what people think, the court still has to do work, right?
Right.
So, no, I think there still is decidedly an outcome here, particularly, I think, and this is just speaking very broadly, but for cases where you may have thought that there may have been a 5-4, you know, so you might still have a 5-3, you know.
And
this is one where, you know, and I'm just again, speaking very broadly. Now, this, you know, this doesn't go to, I don't think, I don't want to say, it wasn't a slam dunk, for instance, for marriage equality, but I think folks had vetted that and really talked it through, and there was enough history on cases that built on it that you kind of knew how Kennedy was going to go.
Yeah.
You know, this one may be a little bit, and I haven't studied this one in depth. I will before we talk about it around the time it's heard.
Mm-hmm.
So this one may not be as clear as that one, but I think it certainly bodes well. I think that the Supreme Court is going to hear it.
Okay.
I do.
If it ends up being a 4-4, the lower court decision stands, and that's a decision against the executive action, right?
It is. It is, exactly. But I will say this. You know, I think I read a statistic that, you know, the majority of cases that the Supreme Court decides to hear in recent years have resulted in overturning or a reversing of the decision that came up to them. So I think it's perhaps, you know, good.
Yeah.
They decided to hear
it in the first place.
So
that actually makes sense because the Supreme Court gets to decide which cases to take. So presumably they're more likely to take the cases where there's questions about what the court immediately below them did. Right?
Exactly. Yeah. And the exception to that would be, I guess, where you have a split of the circuits.
Mm-hmm.
So you have, you know,
which was
both.
Equality.
So you have to kind of decide which of the two. But that this one is a, you know, it's just one ruling. So.
Yeah. Okay. Well, speaking with Carrboro Mayor and Law Professor Lydia Lavelle, and with that vacancy on the Supreme Court, let's turn to that now, because this has been over and above the primary election and that whole fiasco. This is a really interesting issue that's sort of transpiring underneath that, maybe sort of underneath the fold in the newspapers. But this is a fascinating issue. We've got a vacancy in the Supreme Court opened up by the death of Antonin Scalia. President Obama has nominated an individual now, Merrick Garland, who is a well-respected, fairly moderate justice out of the Ninth Circuit, right, I think? D.C. Court of Appeals?
D.C. Court of Appeals,
right. D.C. Court of Appeals,
right.
Yeah. Who's been confirmed by wide majorities in the past by the Senate, but now Senate Republicans dragging their heels. Mitch McConnell says there's not going to be a vote. A lot of Senate Republicans going along with that, still very much up in the air. And Senate Republicans are pointing back to what they say is a history of we don't confirm appointments during an election year. Democrats are saying that's not the tradition at all. What are your thoughts?
Well, I just kind of did a little brief research based on an interview I know that President Obama did today, I think on NPR, because I wanted to find out the particulars of Justice Anthony Kennedy's nomination. And so during the last year of Ronald Reagan's presidency, which would have been in 1987, in June of that year was when Justice Powell retired. And so they set in process the seeking of someone to fill his seat. And you might recall, Aaron, that was when Robert Bork was nominated. And he was nominated in July of 1987, and he fell out of favor in October of 1987. All right. And then for a brief period in early November, Judge Ginsburg was nominated. And then it was discovered that he had smoked marijuana. And so he had to withdraw.
And that was just the end of that.
Right.
Back
that was
in
the end of that. You know,
yeah.
Now you can be president.
Right.
But in any event, so Kennedy was not even really then proposed until November of 1987. In other words, it was the next year, January, when he was vetted, I think, and then he ended up taking office, I don't know, maybe January or February of 88. So there is some recent history to suggest that, you know, this in fact can happen. And in fact, several candidates can be vetted quickly in a short period of a few months. You know, I think the astounding thing about this time frame really is, and I know the Republicans seized on, I think it was Joe Biden's comments. He made those comments, and I'm not so sure that I don't know if I stand by them or not, but he made them in June, the year he made them, on the precipice of, you know, conventions and elections and so on. So even if you're going to say that we're past a time where we can vet and seat someone in a couple of months, Justice Scalia died almost a year before the next president was to take office. And President Obama is completely correct when he says, let the American people decide. Well, the American people elected him. And
did decide.
Yeah, 25% of his presidency is still around while he's, you know, figuring out who to appoint.
And I think what Joe Biden said, and I have not gone back and listened to the entire speech from start to finish, but you can listen to more of the speech than the soundbite pulled out. And I think what he's referring to there, and there is a tradition for this, and Biden's referring to something that's real, is there is a tradition against the Senate confirming an appointee in an election year when it's a justice who just decides at the last minute to retire to let the sitting president nominate a justice to replace them before that person leaves. 1968 is when this happened. Earl Warren tried to retire and let LBJ nominate his replacement, and the Senate didn't go for that. They dragged their heels, and then Nixon gets elected. He nominates Warren Burger after he takes office. But that's a case where it's an obviously political move. You've got a justice who's alive and kicking and doing fine and just decides to retire because he or she wants that president to nominate the replacement. This is a different situation. This is a vacancy that occurs not because someone just decides to retire, but this is a justice who passes away, which is a different case.
Absolutely. And to your point, so many of us, I think, for months or even a couple years have thought, for example, Justice Ginsburg has battled cancer and have thought, you know, hang in there, Ruthie, you know.
Yeah.
And you know, and so what if it had been her? What if she had been the one who died suddenly in February? You know, given that, you know, we're talking about already an extremely liberal member of the court, we wouldn't have seen this type of, I don't think, maybe we would have.
I think
but,
we would have.
Well, we probably would have.
We
would
have.
But it's got to be even worse when your flag bearer is the one who ends up dying suddenly. And then it's, you know, gosh, you know, you don't even have the opportunity to replace you know, someone who I think, you know, espouses your values with someone who else who espouses your mm-hmm. values. So I think that's I think the more, you know, that's really the more shocking part of all of this as well.
Yeah, yeah. And there is a case in, I was doing some research on this too, there was a case in 32, I think, where a justice died and Herbert Hoover, who was about to lose,
right.
Got to nominate the replacement and nominated someone who was the justice who died was a liberal justice, and Hoover actually nominated a liberal justice, and everyone was just surprised and confirmed,
yeah.
And that justice ends up being one of the key liberal justices on a lot of those New Deal decisions in the 1930s. So there's precedent for that too.
That's right.
And I think what Obama did in nominating Merrick Garland, he didn't nominate someone who is Scalia Jr., but he nominated a moderate. He's not nominating some ideologue, and I think that was a good move.
No, I think so too. And I was interested today in his remarks. Obama, you know, they asked, well, what do you ask people when you interview them? Because you can't say, you know, hey, what did you think of Roe v. Wade?
Right.
And you know, the president said he reads the candidate's legal opinions, and he's, as a former professor, constitutional law professor, he can get a pretty good idea of their approach to the law.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes he'll ask a nominee how they approach a legal question when the text of the Constitution is ambiguous and it gives him a sense of the person's judicial philosophy. So I think President Obama, frankly, is uniquely situated to be one to appoint a justice, and he may get the opportunity to appoint a third justice.
Yeah.
So it's I think that, you know, bringing that to the table in terms of his expertise, I imagine the presidents who are not attorneys more closely cower with maybe their legal staff.
Mm-hmm.
But President Obama has that extra kind of layer of expertise there.
Yeah, rarely do we get a constitutional law professor in the White House,
right.
Which is nice. Speaking with Carborough Mayor Lydia Lavelle, and we got to let you go in a second. Before we do, quick word about the getting back to Carborough public hearing that's going to be on Tuesday at Carborough Elementary School, right, on the IFC Food First?
Yeah. So on the agenda, we have a couple of brief kind of consent agenda matters. But on Tuesday night at 7:30, at the 7:30 meeting, we'll have our public hearing on the land use ordinance text amendment that would establish a new use classification that is basically for facilities providing social services with dining, which we don't have that use classification in Carborough at this time.
Mm-hmm.
So the purpose of this public hearing is to consider amending our land use ordinance to establish this use. And then if that ordinance gets passed Tuesday night or whenever we would vote on it at our next meeting, if it were to pass, then that means there would be another time period where, you know, for example, IFC with their Food First proposal would then come forward and say, we're interested in siting a facility here, and then they would go through a conditional rezoning process.
So still a lot of steps to go before a final
Absolutely.
Resolution. But the public hearing Tuesday night, 7:30, moved to Carborough Elementary School just to give it a bigger for more people, I
You guess. Know, Aaron, it's funny because, you know, we moved it just as a kind of cautionary
uh-huh.
move, because we've had one since I have been there hearing where people were out the door in the
right,
hallways.
Right.
And I mean, we could have 50 people Tuesday night and 50 people who want to talk. We could have 200 people and 10 people who want to talk.
Mm-hmm.
And we could have 25 people. I mean, we have no way of knowing.
Right.
But it seemed easy enough to get Carborough Elementary. They were very accommodating. They're available. The acoustics are great. It's mm-hmm. very close. So we felt like it was, you know, probably a good move on a subject that there might be a lot of interest in.
All right. So 7:30 Carborough Elementary School, Tuesday night, IFC Food First public hearing, part of the Board of Aldermen meeting. Carborough Mayor Lydia Lavelle, thank you so much. I love talking con law with you, because I honestly did not know about the Douglas Ginsburg thing from 87. I had no idea that
you missed
that happened. So I did. So thank you so much, and we'll talk to you next week.
Okay.